Our next sponsor is Podcorn. Podcorn is a marketplace that connects podcasters with great sponsorship opportunities like host-read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, and more. Podcorn takes out the middleman so podcasters of all levels have a chance to monetize their podcasts, setting their own rates and having full control over their collaborations.
We started using Podcorn a few months ago and it's already changed the game. We can actually make some money from podcasting, which means we can put more time into doing what we love and trying to produce quality content. I found the site so easy to use, podcorn.com. You'll find the link in our show notes. It really is easy to navigate and you can view loads of different sponsorship opportunities right there on your screen. It couldn't be easier to pitch a proposal to a brand to work with them on a campaign. Podcorn makes sure podcasters are able to keep their creative freedom and have full control over how and when we monetize. They also have automated payment, which means you get your money as soon as you've submitted your work. If you're a fellow podcast host, definitely check out their site, podcorn.com.
You know, Alice, you really need to come home.
This is now a murder investigation, and I need the public's help to find out whoever is responsible.
I believe the state failed Alice and our family. Alice was not tragic, but what happened to her was.
Welcome to Crimelapse. I am Eileen.
And I'm Charlie.
On August 28, 2014, 14-year-old Alice Gross left her family home to meet some friends at around 1 p.m. She had told her parents that she would be home later that evening, but she never returned. The eventual search operation launched was the largest deployment of Metropolitan Police officers since the 7/7 London bombing attack 11 years earlier. By the time it was launched, it was too late. This is Surprised by Joy.
Hanwell Ealing is a West London suburb that is home to over 25,000 people. Located close to the city, it still manages to maintain a rural feeling. This is in part due to the parks and canal walks throughout. The inhabitants are mostly young professional families, and in 2014, Jose and Rosalind Gross were raising their daughters Nina and Alice there. Their youngest daughter Alice Poppy Madeline Gross was born in London on Valentine's Day 2000. She was a kind girl. In an interview with The Guardian, her mum Rosalind said she was a, quote, lively, popular and compassionate girl with many friends. She was witty, smart and academic, but she could also push boundaries. In this way, she was no different to any normal teenager, unquote. Like most teenagers, Alice wanted to be cool and popular. She showed her personality with her fashion sense, her hair and her makeup. But Alice wasn't a typical teenager. Despite the typical adolescence rebellion streaks, she excelled across the board. She was a talented musician who wrote and performed her own songs. She had an incredible ability to learn any instrument. She was already playing the piano and the violin, but had begun to learn the guitar and ukulele. Alice had been struggling. She was diagnosed with anorexia. It was a worry, but she seemed to be doing okay. The family were close-knit, and Alice was receiving treatment. On August 28, Alice left home and told her mother Rosalind that she would be back by 6 p.m. When Alice didn't come home by 6 as she had said she would, her parents were worried. They tried calling her phone, but it had been switched off. Like any worried parent, their mind raced, but they started by calling around to see if anyone had seen Alice. When no one had, they reported her as a missing person to the police by 7 p.m. By midnight, Alice was listed as a high-risk missing person. Brentside High School was about to reopen for a new term. Alice was supposed to be sitting her GCSE exams that year, but there would be an empty desk. She was walking alone on the day she went missing, and her parents think she might have done this more frequently than they had realised. She had not been to meet the friend that she said she was going to meet. She'd say she was going to meet someone particular when she wasn't. Perhaps she just needed some time alone. Alice was described as being 5'2" with a slim build and shoulder-length light brown hair. She was last seen wearing dark blue jeans, a grey top and tartan-framed glasses. She'd been carrying a black rucksack. At 2:23 p.m, Alice was seen on CCTV cameras near a Holiday Inn at Brentford Lock walking towards Kew. Less than an hour and a half later, she was seen on the same camera walking back towards Hanwell. She had been going through a rough time, but there was no indication that she would have run away or wanted to disappear. In fact, at 3 p.m. she had texted her dad asking what time he would be home so that she could get into the house as she didn't have her house keys. Her dad wasn't due to be home until 6. But at 4:26 p.m, CCTV saw her crossing a bridge along the canal near to where she lived. She was almost home. That was the last time Alice was seen alive. On September 1st, Alice's family made a public appeal for Alice to come home, and her sister set up a Facebook page called Find Alice Gross. The Metropolitan Police had carried out door-to-door inquiries and spoken with Alice's friends, but no one had seen the 14-year-old, and searches in parks and open spaces revealed nothing.
If you were on the canal towpath during that time and you saw Alice, whether you were walking on a bike, perhaps on a barge, please come forward and speak to the police now. The message is more urgent. The longer Alice has been missing, the more worried and concerned that we feel, and obviously the greater the anguish that we feel. But it could be that something jogged somebody's memory today and they were on that towpath on that day. So we're asking really people to come forward as witnesses if they have any information whatsoever about what might have happened to her or about where she might be now.
No matter how insignificant it may appear, it's really important that they come forward, because as you say, it's just the slightest little thing, maybe they saw her pass by somewhere or anything, really, not to hold back. Don't worry about, you know, being silly or whatever. That's for somebody else to sort out.
It's important that if you saw Alice on the towpath that day that you come forward, but it's also important that if you were on the towpath at the right time and didn't see Alice, that could also be a significant detail, and the police would be very interested in anybody who was in the area at that time and who also didn't see Alice on that.
That's right, yeah.
Alice is a very, she's a very lively, funny girl, she's quirky. You have all the little family jokes and family routines, and we're really looking forward to having those again. But we're also just really looking forward to the sound of her voice, seeing her smile, just her presence. The house feels very empty without her, despite being full of people.
Such a hole in the family, and every day I pass her door, bedroom door, and I expect her to be in there, and she's not there. So, you know, Alice, you really need to come home. And whoever you're with, she needs to be home. This is the place that she needs to be. She needs to be looked after, and that's the right place for her.
Alice, we love you, we miss you, we're desperate for you to be home again. We miss you as a daughter, and Nina misses you as a sister. We want our family to be whole again. We miss everything about you, and we just want you to know how much we want you with us, because home is where you belong.
On September 3rd, Rosalind confirmed Alice's diagnosis publicly, but said there was nothing to suggest the teenager had run away. There had been no family arguments and nothing to suggest Alice didn't want to come home. On the same day, Scotland Yard's Homicide and Major Crime Squad got involved and took over the case. Normally, this would be a cause for concern and an indication of a recovery search rather than rescue, but at this stage they were confident they could find Alice safely. The next day, the police released the CCTV footage of Alice walking along Trumpers Way Canal Bridge. Police revealed that her black rucksack had been found by the River Brent on September 2nd. Alice's purse and phone were missing, but the shoes she had been wearing were inside the bag. The Gross family renewed their appeal for Alice to come home. Alice's phone had last connected to a network just after 5 p.m. on August 28th. It was switched off and could not be found anywhere. The police were looking for the phone, a white iPhone 4S with a distinctive crack case that Alice had decorated herself. They believe the phone might hold some clues as to how or why Alice vanished. Shortly after Alice was captured on CCTV, 5 cyclists were seen heading in the same direction. They were urged to come forward on September 6th, after photos of them were released. A 25-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of murder, but was subsequently released after a few days. The next day, September 7th, police divers searched the Grand Union Canal and the area was searched with the help of a sniffer dog. A second man was arrested on suspicion of murder. Police said the arrests were independent of one another and that it was still a missing persons inquiry. At this stage, nothing else was found, and another person had gone missing. The second missing person was Arnas Salkins, a 41-year-old builder originally from Latvia. He had last been seen on September 3rd at his home in Ealing, West London. He often cycled to work along a similar route Alice had been walking on the day she disappeared. He was seen on CCTV the same day Alice went missing, cycling along the same path, moments after she was last spotted. It was very out of character for Arnas to go missing. He lived with his partner and child. He left work in Isleworth at around 3:30 p.m. on his bike. Arnas was described as 5 foot 10 inches tall, of stocky build with dark hair normally tied back. He was believed to have left his home early on the morning of September 4th. He was supposed to meet a friend to cycle together to work, but he never showed up. His bike was a red Trek mountain bike. He was reported missing on September 5th. He disappeared after police announced they had CCTV footage of Alice. On September 16th, the police announced they were searching for Salkins in relation to Alice's disappearance. There was no indication that they knew each other, but he was seen on CCTV moments after Alice and may have known something about where she went. As more information came out about Arnas Salkins, the investigators became more suspicious. As it turned out, Salkins was tried and convicted of murder in his home country, Latvia, between 1997 and 1998. He had taken his wife, 22-year-old Rudita, to a forest and attacked her with a steel pole and an 8-inch knife. His mother-in-law cast her suspicions on Arnas. Speaking with the Daily Mail, she said she believed he had shot Rudita in the stomach a few years earlier. No one had been convicted of that. Salkins had lured his wife into a forest where he attacked her and stabbed her to death before placing her body in a shallow grave. He reported her missing 2 days later. Her body was later found decomposing in the forest. In his confession, he said that he had killed her, smoked a cigarette, and then went home and slept well. He claimed it was because she molested his daughter and that she was a lesbian. He served 7 years of a 12-year sentence and moved to the UK just a few years after his release. At that time, there were no background checks into every person entering the UK, so his criminal history went unknown.
Salkins had been arrested in 2009 on suspicion of indecent assault. The alleged victim was 14 years old, the same age as Alice Gross. He was suspected of drugging and sexually assaulting the teenage girl, but the allegation could not be substantiated and the case was dropped due to insignificant evidence. The arrest remained on file, but he wasn't officially named as a suspect in Alice's disappearance until September 18th. Alice had been missing for 3 weeks at this stage. A £20,000 reward was offered for any information leading to the discovery of Alice.
It's now 3 weeks since Alice's disappearance, and I wanted to thank the public for all the help they have given us. My appeal continues that we need more information and we need more sightings. We need more information about Alice. It is as a consequence of that we're offering a £20,000 reward for any information that will lead us to finding Alice. Secondly, Arnas Salkins has today been declared as a suspect in the disappearance of Alice. We know that he was 15 minutes behind her on the 28th, on the 28th of August on the towpath. We are appealing to the public to assist us in finding. Do you know where Arnis is? If you do, please contact the police, as we need to speak to him urgently.
But there were many other cyclists as well on the footpath at that time. So what in particular has made you focus on Arnis?
Well, Arnis, given his inexplicable disappearance as far as his family is concerned, his antecedents history that we now know, and his very sudden disappearance without taking bank cards or telephones, simply disappearance, and the fact that he was on the towpath on the day itself, raises significant concerns in relation to what might have happened.
So suspicions were raised. You then looked into his background, didn't you? What did you find out after that?
Well, we know that Arnis has a conviction in Latvia for murder. He was convicted in 1998, we understand, but we are liaising currently with the Latvian authorities in order to find out further details. We also know that in 2009, he was arrested for an indecent assault in London. Unfortunately, the victim of that, or the complainant in that case, failed to substantiate the allegation, and we couldn't take any further action.
This is not a murder inquiry, it's a missing persons inquiry, but it's also now very much a manhunt, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, I have no information to indicate anything other than Alice is alive at this moment, so my focus remains on finding Alice. But, of course, we are also now into an appeal around finding Arnis Zalkins, who we want to question about Alice's disappearance.
The search for both Alice and Arnis Zalkins continued. Zalkins' home in Ealing was forensically searched as divers continued to search the River Brent. On September 23rd, detectives travelled to Latvia to search for Arnis Zalkins. The next day, they said they had no power to arrest the suspect if he had managed to flee to Latvia. They needed more evidence for a European arrest warrant to be issued. The investigation had been criticised because it took Scotland Yard almost 2 weeks from the time Arnis Zalkins went missing for them to search his home. 3 weeks after her disappearance, he was named as a suspect. The Homicide and Serious Crime Department of Scotland Yard only took over the case from local police after the discovery of Alice's rucksack on September 2nd, 5 days after she was last seen. Zalkins had never been flagged up as a convicted criminal on the Home Office database, but detectives would have known this if they had rang Interpol sooner than they did. After they were informed of his criminal history, it took another 6 days before they searched his home. On September 30th, search teams find a body in the River Brent. The investigators revealed that whoever put the body in the river had tried to make sure it was never found. The person found in the river was confirmed to be 14-year-old Alice Gross on October 1st. The area where Alice's body was found had already been searched, but it had been concealed, and whoever put her there made significant efforts to hide her.
Good morning, I am Commander Graham McNulty from the Specialist Crime and Operations Directorate in the Metropolitan Police. Last night, the 30th of September, a search was carried out at the River Brent as part of our ongoing investigation into the disappearance of Alice Gross. Following this search, we have sadly recovered a body from the water. This is obviously a significant development, and Alice's family have been informed. We are unable to make a formal identification at this stage, but clearly this news is devastating for Alice's family and friends. My thoughts are with them at this time, and I would ask you to respect their privacy and allow them some space. This is now a murder investigation, and I need the public's help to find out whoever is responsible. I would urge anyone who may know something to come forward. Even if you have not yet spoken out, it is not too late to tell us what you know. I would like to thank the local community of Ealing, who have shown us huge support and patience during the course of our investigation. This discovery will have a significant impact throughout the borough. You only need to walk around the surrounding streets to see the effect that Alice's disappearance has had on the whole community. Our work at this scene is crucial to ensure we capture all the available evidence, allowing us to identify who is responsible for this dreadful crime. This may take some time, and I would ask people to remain patient with us. I can confirm that significant efforts were made to conceal the body. For several reasons, including protecting the investigation, I do not wish to comment any further at this point on the circumstances. Finally, I would like to reiterate my request that Alice's family and friends are given the time to come to terms with this news. My thoughts, and all of us within the Metropolitan Police Service, are with them at this very difficult time. Thank you.
Alice's parents released a statement expressing their grief. Here are some extracts from that statement. Quote, "It is difficult to comprehend that our sweet and beautiful daughter was the victim of a terrible crime. Why anyone would want to hurt her is something that we are struggling to come to terms with. Alice was a loving and much loved daughter and sister, a quirky, live spark of a girl, beautiful inside and out. She was a funny companion, a loyal friend, both passionate and compassionate, and so talented with a bright future ahead of her. She brought so much joy to our family and those who knew her. We still don't know who is responsible for this crime, and we ask that people continue to help the police by giving them information that could help bring the perpetrator to justice. We would like to thank all those that have supported us in our efforts to find Alice, especially the local community. It is comforting to know that so many people care. This is a personal and private tragedy, and one that we want to be allowed to deal with in that manner. Rather than fearing any individual or group, we use it to further any political agenda. This is a time for grieving, and not a time for anger or recriminations." Unquote. Detectives had intensified the search for the man they believed killed Alice, Arnis Saukans. Saukans had been missing for almost a month, and searches had turned up very little to indicate where he could be. On October 4th, a badly decomposed body was found in dense woodland in West London, in Boston Manor Park, just over a mile from where Alice's rucksack and body had been found. 2 days later, police confirmed the body found was that of the prime suspect, Arnis Saukans. At the inquest into his death on October 13th, Lan Atkinson, a coroner's officer, told the court, quote, "Mr. Saukans was found on 4th of October and his body was found suspended by his neck in dense woodland in Boston Manor Park adjacent to the canal. A post-mortem conducted on 6th of October found a conditional cause of death is consistent with hanging. There is no evidence of third-party involvement." Unquote.
Alice's funeral took place on October 23, 2014. It was a humanist service full of music and love. Tributes were paid to the 14-year-old schoolgirl as videos played of Alice performing songs she had written herself. The yellow ribbon-lined streets were full of mourners and people wanting to pay their respects. The ribbons had once been a symbol of hope that Alice would be found alive. Now they lined the way to her final resting place. A clock tower in the centre of Hanwell was decorated with flowers and messages as a tribute to Alice. Her casket was painted by her grandmother, the scene of a meadow with her beloved cats. Alice's family said in a statement, quote, "Alice was so spirited, so present, so vital, and so full of promise. We find it almost impossible to understand what has happened and that we have to say goodbye to her. We want Alice's funeral to focus on the joy of Alice's life and the joy of having known her." The funeral congregation sang "You Are My Sunshine," and Alice's grandfather read a poem written by William Wordsworth that went as follows. "Surprised by joy, impatient as the wind, I turned to share the transport. Oh, with whom but thee, long buried in the silent tomb, that spot no vicissitude can find. Love, faithful love, call thee to mind. But how could I forget thee, through what power, even for least a vision of an hour? Have I been so beguiled as to be blind to my most grievous loss, that thought's return was the worst pang that sorrow ever bore, save one, only one, when I stood forlorn, knowing my heart's best treasure was no more, that neither present time nor years unborn could to my sight that heavenly face restore. A public memorial ceremony was held just over a week later on November 2nd. At the memorial, her parents, Jose and Roz, thanked the local people for their help. Hundreds had lined up in the rain to attend. Her mother spoke to the crowd saying, "I have been numbed by shock and grief. I have felt outrage and anger at the loss of her life and unbelievable sadness at the emptiness that has been left. I have racked my brains for all the what-ifs of that day. Anything that might have stopped this random, incomprehensible tragedy. It is even harder to talk about that pain than it is to talk about Alice. I cannot imagine life without Alice. I think of all the hugs, shared jokes, evenings spent snuggled on the sofa, goodnight kisses, the confidence of after-school conversations, Alice playing the piano in her dressing gown, singing, shopping, baking, the way Alice still called me mummy. The future seems bleak without Alice. It is only the incredible support of family, friends and the wider community that has kept us going." Unquote. The inquests into the deaths of both Erna Salkins and Alice Gross had been opened and adjourned as the investigation continued. The inquest into Erna Salkins' death was held in September 2015. Earlier that year, in January, Scotland Yard said charges would have been brought against him for the murder of Alice Gross if he had been alive.
On the 28th of August last year, Alice Gross was attacked and murdered in the area of the Grand Union Canal. A huge investigation and search commenced. And so as a consequence of that, is today we can say that Erna Salkins was responsible for the murder of Alice Gross.
Salkins' partner had a hard time believing he was involved in Alice's death, stating he was, quote, "very quiet," unquote, and was missing his children in Latvia. The coroner read a statement written by Detective Sergeant Michael Hartley saying, quote, "There is strong evidence to implicate Salkins in the murder of Alice Gross. This may go some way to explain his death. The abduction and subsequent murder of Alice could have been a completely random and opportunistic attack formulated by Salkins when he passed Alice that day," unquote. Erna Salkins had been seen on CCTV buying beer after Alice had been killed. He returned to the riverbed on at least 5 occasions to ensure he concealed her body. DCI Chalmers said that Salkins' suicide might have followed police cordons being put up in the area. He said, quote, "When he lost control of the deposition site, he saw a lot of police activity, and he must have come to the conclusion that if we hadn't already found Alice, we would soon find her. This was an opportunistic, unforeseen event. I didn't know what his motivation was, but I suspect there must have been a sexual driver. Whether he intended to murder her or not resulted in her death. I believe the efforts he took to hide her body, he clearly didn't intend for her to be found," unquote.
He'd gone to enormous lengths to conceal her. She was tied up, she was placed in bin liners, she was also weighed down with a bicycle wheel, and on top of those bicycle wheels were bricks. And then on top of that, there were large tree trunks, a number of large tree trunks that had been placed over her body, weighing it down, pushing it into the silt of the river.
The inquest into Alice's death was reopened June 2016. The jury heard how a decomposing body was found a month after Alice disappeared on August 28, 2014. The victim was identified as Alice Gross. She was naked apart from one sock. A fabric tie had been passed around her neck and left leg, drawing her into a fetal position. She was then wrapped in black plastic bin liners, the same kind Erna Salkins had in work. Her body had been weighed down with stones and a bicycle wheel. Logs from the side of the river rolled in on top of the body to further conceal it. Detective Inspector Andrew Chalmers testified at the inquest, saying that he believed Alice's body had been hidden in the bushes overnight, before Salkins returned the next morning to dump it in the river. Quote, "Subsequent efforts he took to conceal his wife, I think, are comparable to the efforts he made to conceal Alice. The area offered someone the opportunity to take someone out of view, out of the eyes of the public and into the undergrowth. He might have killed her while trying to subdue her and keep her quiet. I think he hid her body in the undergrowth, I believe he returned that evening and that's when she was hidden in the water. I have no proof of that, but that seems a likely conclusion. He went down the following morning, probably smoking the cigarette that was found on the bank, and realised he was going to have to take greater measures to conceal her. Unquote. A post-mortem carried out by Dr. Ashley Fegan-Earl revealed that Alice Gross died as a result of compression asphyxia, likely caused by someone heavy lying on top of her, impacting her ability to breathe and crushing her chest. There were no obvious signs of injury or sexual assault, but swabs indicated that the murder was sexually motivated, as Arnis Zalkan's DNA was found on Alice's body. Dr. Fegan-Earl testified, saying, quote, "There's nothing to suggest that she drowned. There are no injuries consistent with the struggle. The circumstance of her finding dictate that sexual assault must be considered considering she was naked. The finding of DNA on the vulva must support the possibility that this was a sexually motivated homicide. The circumstances indicate this was an unnatural death with a likely sexual motivation of homicide." Unquote. Alice was only 40 kilos. Arnis Zalkan killed her and then disposed of her body in the River Brent. When he had committed his first murder, he confessed that he smoked a cigarette and went home. A cigarette butt with his DNA was found metres from where Alice's body was found. A cracked white iPhone 4S cover was found concealed in his garden. He returned to the area where he dumped Alice's body over a 30-hour period. His partner said that he had been behaving normally in the days after Alice's death. On September 3rd, Alice's disappearance became a murder investigation. His internet history showed that he carried out an internet search on the investigation, and he hung himself the next day. A report on the prevention of future deaths was written by Dr. Fiona Wilcox, the coroner for the Inner West London jurisdiction. It lists matters of concern relating to the time it took for police to realise Arnis Zalkan was a convicted murderer. Alice's family were stunned Zalkan's was not being monitored. They called for reform on how information about high-risk offenders is exchanged across Europe. Alice's mother told the court, quote, "It is impossible for us to convey the devastation to the family by Alice's death. There are a lot of unanswered questions, and we will likely never get to the bottom of what happened that day. We want to reiterate that the reason for these questions is so that we can establish or not the systems for monitoring foreign offenders and cross-border sharing of information are robust. We appreciate that they may have changed significantly, but we remain stunned that a foreign national convicted for murder in his own country was not monitored, or not even known about in any way. This has destroyed much of our faith in our country's ability to protect its citizens. The Home Office and the police forces nationwide should be doing everything to ensure this should not be allowed to happen again." Unquote. Alice's family requested that her death should not be used to push an anti-immigration agenda. They, like Alice, believe in the freedom of movement and human rights. In an interview with The Guardian, Alice's mother Roz spoke of an essay Alice had penned in support of European migration and its cultural benefits. Roz said the essay was horribly ironic. When discussing UKIP's want for foreign criminals to be banned from the UK, Alice wrote, quote, "They believe that this will keep Britain safe from crime by eliminating the number of criminals living in its premises. However, I believe that this takes away the concept of equality amongst the community by implying that criminals don't deserve the same rights everybody else has. It also depicts Britain to believe foreign criminals are different and dangerous compared to the British criminals, reintroducing the idea of racism." Unquote. Alice's name and murder was exploited to fit far-right anti-immigration agendas in the run-up to the election on whether the UK should leave the EU. Her family believed the government failed them, and criminals moving throughout Europe should be monitored more closely, but they do not believe borders should be closed.
Regardless of whether legal responsibility can be attributed to the state for Alice's death, I believe the state failed Alice and our family. Alice was not tragic, but what happened to her was.
Our concern has been to ensure that there are fair and proportionate rules governing the movement of serious criminals within Europe, whether that is a Latvian coming to the UK or a dangerous UK citizen travelling abroad. We believe that had such measures been in place, Alice's death might have been prevented.
Alice Gross was kind, thoughtful, and incredibly creative. A memorial fund set up in her honour has raised almost £80,000 for youth music. On the site, Alice is described as loving, loyal, and quirky. She was a talented musician who wrote and performed her own songs. Her original composition, Don't Let It Go Away, has amassed over 100,000 views on YouTube, and we're going to play that now. Alice had a beautiful voice that was silenced way too soon. CrimeCon, the world's number one true crime event, is coming to London next summer, partnered by Crime and Investigation. On June 12th and 13th, 2021, we'll be in London along with more than 20 other amazing true crime podcasters on Podcast Row.
There will also be 5 stages with over 50 hours of incredible true crime content, from cold cases, notorious cases, authors, survivors, and of course, other true crime fanatics. Be sure to follow CrimeCon on social media at crimecon_UK and on crimecon.co.uk, where you can buy your tickets. Use our code CRIMELAPSE for 10% off. See you there!